With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The following program is brought to you by the Preferred Home Team. Content is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal or real estate advisors. Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Hour, a forum of ideas, plans, and expert advice on all things real estate. Andy Prasky with RE/MAX Advantage Plus was named Super Agent by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. Chris Rooney of RE/MAX Preferred is a Lakeshore and Luxury Home Specialist. Together, they cover the Twin Cities. This combined dynamic duo has sold over 2,000 homes, ranked in the top 1% nationwide, top 10 in the state of Minnesota, and still have time to get together every Saturday to talk about real estate. Here's Abby Prasky and Chris Rooney, Denny Long, and the Real Estate Radio Hour.
Answering your real estate questions, as we always like to do, either by phone or by text. And I'll give you the phone number and text number in just a moment. I see Chris. I don't see Andy.
I know.
He's vacationing.
He's on
family vacation,
yeah,
right?
Into Mexico.
We did.
Yeah, good for him.
All right, good for him.
Get away. Yep. It's all going to start up again real soon.
Now, yes, it will. Now, I suppose because of the holiday, things have kind of slowed down for you in the last 7 days.
Yeah, these next 2 days are bad. But then again, yesterday we got three showings set up on a Friday. So it was quite interesting. But
for this weekend?
Yeah, they were set up yesterday for last night.
Oh, for last night.
The same property that's been on the market for a little while. So you don't know.
So
we did get a couple sold this weekend.
Here it is, almost New Year's Day. And a whole new year. Have you got any in your crystal ball there, your real estate crystal ball? Are you feeling positive?
Oh, yeah. I'm always positive.
You are.
Yeah. But the reason I am, too, is because we've been doing a lot of market analysis and people that have already bought, like, new construction that now need to sell their homes. And that's always a good sign. You know, people are buying and they're buying non-contingent.
Ah.
You know, they're buying what they have to do, and now we have to get their house sold. And it's all about timing. And it was interesting because I was talking to someone that lives on the lake. And the lake is a timing thing. Usually, like, we like it blue and green so you can see the water and the grass. And it always looks the best. But there's also segments that hit. And they're like everyone's, you know, maybe some of those ranges are starting to go. So if it's a walkout rambler that's got somewhat of a flat lot, There's like people that want those, and so sometimes you got to get them on earlier. Mm. So there's a lot of strategy involved in some of those properties.
If you have a real estate type of question, we're going to zero in on a certain topic or two, which we'll get to in a moment. But let me give you the phone number and the text number, 651-989-9226 if you want to call in your question. Or again, send in a text, you might know it, 818-07. A couple of Chris's in studio today.
Yeah, well, Chris Mahold's with us. MFK and Associates. He's an accountant that's been with us many times, and we always like to try to get him in before the end of the year. So if there's any really good little tax benefits that you can do on Monday,
now he can talk about this. You can't
exactly, and that's you know how many tax questions we get.
Yes.
We get a ton of them. So
yes.
I thought we would bring Chris in, and now that Andy's not here, he'll get to talk too.
Life is good.
I hope Andy doesn't listen. Anyways, and my voice is going. But I think what we first should do, Chris, if you could kind of explain what are the tax, you know, if I'm going to own a house and live in a house, what are the tax benefits? How much tax do I have to pay when I sell? And then maybe we could go on the investment side or a second home side as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, just kind of starting it out from just owning your own home, kind of the tax benefits of that. You can deduct the real estate taxes on that home, and you can deduct the mortgage interest you pay on that home. Now, the rules have changed this year a little bit compared to the past.
Right, which is good. This is good to hear.
Yep. So in the past, I could deduct the mortgage interest, real estate taxes, without a problem. As long as my the mortgage on my home was less than $1 million. Not a problem. I could deduct it. Under the new rules.
So we're not talking about Denny.
We're not talking about Denny. Correct. Under the new rules, as individuals, they've changed the deductions a little bit. The standard deduction for a married couple has gone up to $24,000 from about a little over $12,000 in the past to $24,000. And how it works is either I can deduct the standard deduction on my individual tax return, which would be $24,000, or I can itemize deductions and deduct those. And basically you look at those two, whichever is going to be more is what I would most likely deduct.
But now, not more than $24,000.
I can deduct more than $24,000.
Okay.
So if my and the rules have changed a little bit. In the past, I could deduct my state income taxes and real estate taxes. There was no limitation on that. Now I'm limited to $10,000 in total combined with my real estate tax and the taxes I pay to, say, the state of Minnesota or Iowa, those sorts of things with that. So the limitation of those is $10,000. So I can deduct as itemized deductions medical expenses over a limit, which is about 10% of your income. I can deduct medical expenses. I can deduct $10,000 of taxes, up to $10,000 of taxes of real estate tax and income tax. And then my mortgage interest I can deduct also. So when I add those three things and charitable contributions with that. So if I add those up, let's say I have $1,000 of charitable contributions. I have $15,000 of mortgage interest and $10,000 of state income tax. I'd have $26,000 of itemized deductions. Well, that's more than my $24,000 standard deduction. So I'm going to deduct my itemized deductions in that case.
Okay.
On the flip side, let's say my mortgage interest is only $8,000. Now it's my total itemized deductions are going to be less than the standard deduction of $24,000. So in that case, I would take the standard deduction because it's going to be more. So I'm getting kind of a free deduction on my tax return going forward with it.
So as a married couple that's renting a house and a married couple that owns a house and their tax or their interest adjustment is like, just say the $24,000, they both get to deduct the same amount.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep. Yep. So, yeah. So if I'm renting, I won't have enough itemized deductions to itemize. So I'll take the standard deduction. If I own a house and say my mortgage interest combined with other deductions is less than $24,000, I'm going to deduct $24,000. Now, again, if my mortgage interest was higher.
You still get that.
Yep. Yeah. Plus my itemized deduction. Then I would take the itemized deduction on that.
Okay. How about if I'm going to sell that house? I own a house. I've lived in it.
Yep.
Let's just kind of for at least 2 years.
Yep.
How does the tax base work?
Yeah. So if I've lived in my house for more than 2 years, 2 out of 5 years, and I sell it, as long as the gain on that home, if I'm married, is less than $500,000, I don't have to pay any tax on that. So if I buy the house for $200,000, live in it for 3 years, sell it for $300,000, I've got a gain of $100,000 there that I don't have to pay tax on with that. And if I'm single, the limit is $250,000 on the gain that I can exclude with that. So,
well, which is a great way in which to be able to make some money in there. I do have a number of people that are on the 2 to 3 year plan, you know, and that's what they're doing. They're going into homes, buying them, you know, and then making that money because it's tax free, you know. So it's really a heck of a lot more money than.
Yep. Then I can use that money to buy a new home with it.
Buy a new home and use it and then. How about someone that's lived in that house for less than 2 years? So say I buy this house, I buy it for $300,000, I sell it for $350,000, net $350,000 out of it. So I make $50,000 and I've only been there a year.
Yep. In that case, you're going to pay tax on that gain. So I bought it for $300,000, sell it for $350,000. I'm going to pay tax on that $50,000 gain. Now, and there are some exclusions with that.
What are those?
Under certain circumstances.
How about relocation?
Medical issues, some relocation, those sorts of things. So,
okay.
So, yep. So, you've got to look at those with that. So, consult your tax advisor if that situation comes up.
Okay. And then how about as far as investment properties go? I own an investment property. I've owned it for 5 years. How's the tax working?
Yep. So an investment property. So, I own a rental home. I've rented it out for 5 years. Haven't used it personally at all. And I've taken depreciation on that home over the years. So, let's say we buy the house for $200,000. Rent it out, sell it for $300,000, that gain of $100,000 is going to be taxable. I'm going to have to pay tax on that. And then plus, if I've taken some depreciation, let's say I paid $200,000, I've depreciated it $25,000, my base in that home drops to $175,000. So now I have a gain of $125,000 I have to pay tax on with that.
Yeah. And then there's some ways in which to be able to alleviate that tax as well by moving it into another property.
Yeah. So there's what's called a like-kind exchange or a 1031 exchange with that. And where you can, if it's a rental property, I can sell that rental property and buy a new rental property and defer the gain on that. So in that example, the $125,000 gain, I don't pay tax on it now. It reduces the basis in the new home, so I have less to depreciate. Ultimately, when you sell the rental property, the last rental property, you're going to pay tax on it at that time. And the rules are very stringent on that. There's time frames on when you have to identify a new property, close on a new property. So if you're looking at doing that, definitely talk to a professional to make sure you're following the rules with that. And
what's important, too, is that anything that you move to the next property has to be equal or greater than.
Correct.
So if you sold it for $200,000, you have to buy a property for at least $200,000. If you owned one, if you owed $150 on it, you have to at least owe $150 on it. And we have to move all that profit into it as
correct,
well.
Correct,
otherwise, you get taxed.
Tell you what, as we head to this break, we'll alert our listeners if you have a real estate type of question or certainly one for Chris. Call it in or text it in, 651-989-9226. Send a text if you like some folks are already doing, 81807. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our real estate show. Denny Long here. Chris Rooney is here. Andy's taking the day off today. But those, Chris, that join us a little bit late, who did you bring
with
you?
Yeah, it's Chris Mahold with MFK & Associates, our resident accountant here.
He can talk taxes where you cannot.
He can talk them, yep.
So we welcome those type of questions, too, along with your regular real estate type of questions. We have callers. We have texters. Let's get to them. Scott is calling from Hudson, I believe. Go ahead, Scott. Thank you.
Hey, good morning. I love listening to your show.
Thank you.
Your comment earlier about selling a house got me thinking about a scenario. I wonder if your guest can comment on the tax consequences.
Okay.
So my wife and I bought a house 2.5 years ago for $500,000. We've put about $100,000 into it. Now, if we sold that house this summer, for example, and bought another house for, say, 630, can you describe a little bit any tax consequences or gains that I might incur?
Go ahead, Mr. Mahold.
Yeah, so you bought the house for $500,000. You have a improvements of $100,000. And how much are you selling it for, $600,000?
What do you think it's worth?
If I sold the house for $600,000 after putting $100,000 in improvements, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you bought it for $500,000, you've put $100,000 of improvements into it. So actually, you'd have no gain on that house because really you've put $600,000 into the house and you're selling it for $600,000. So there would be no gain or loss. And it wouldn't be taxable anyway since the gain is less than $500,000. You've lived in it for 2 or 5 years. So
yeah.
I think you're okay with that.
So in reality, if he did $500,000, could you do this? Put in $100,000, so it's $600,000 you have into it. I sell it for $1.1 million. There's $500,000 for 2.5 years. He gets that $500,000.
Correct. There'd be no gain on that.
Right.
All right. So good news for Scott. Very good. Line is open, 651-989-9226. Kevin is calling from Mendota. Kevin, the guys are listening. What's your question?
My wife and I have two kids in college living near the U and combined paying about $2,000 a month in rent. With apartments, thinking about buying a home to save them and us some money, where I know I would at least save money, the mortgage would be cheaper than the two rents combined. Would that be a second home? Would it be an investment property? We're thinking about buying a bigger home that maybe take a couple renters in, some of their friends for income. What should I be thinking about? And thank you.
Excellent. I mean, I think there's a couple questions in there because for the mortgage company, you're going to have to determine whether that's a second home or an investment property as well, because that'll depend on down payment and stuff. But as far as the taxable.
Yeah. So for tax purposes, it can get a little complicated in those scenarios. One, if you buy the second home and your daughters live in it for college, it's treated as a second home. No different than if I had a cabin up north. I'd be able to deduct the mortgage interest and real estate taxes. Again, under the new rules, there's limitations that would apply to those, but those rules would kick in. Now, if your daughters lived in there and you had renters in there, now, you know, it gets a little more complicated because now it's a rental property, but it's part personal use also. So expenses can be limited on that. So really, in that scenario, you really need to talk to a tax professional to make sure you get the right answer with that.
Yeah, and I think, too, I mean, you find that a lot in a second home or a cabin where people will VRBO it or Airbnb where they're getting rental out of it. Now, is it really a second home? So I know there's little.
Yeah. So I guess kind of in general, there are rules that, I've got a cabin that I'm renting out, and I rent it out most of the time. So I use that cabin for personal use more than 14 days during the year. The deductions get limited, and if there's a loss from that property, the loss could be limited also where I wouldn't be able to deduct it. So there are a lot of rules with that where if you're mixing personal use with rental or business, it really gets complicated at that point.
And I'll tell you what, it is so smart to be able to, you know, discuss this before you go out and buy it and then try to make it – figure it out. And the other thing is buying a place down by the U – is not easy to do either. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's hot because a lot of people do exactly that. And it's a great way in which to do it because the rents are super high. And if you can, you know, and those values aren't going down either
right over
there. So it's just the idea about finding one.
Before we break, we'll do that momentarily. I urge the folks on the line, stay there. We'll get your questions answered. Here's a text that came in a bit ago. It says, hello and bon année. Do you think we'll go back to 3-4% interest rates in 2019?
I don't. There's different programs that you can do that have, you know, they're 5-year loans or 7-year loans that you can kind of get into the fours. But I just doubt that's going to happen.
You doubt it.
No. Yep.
All right. We'll take this break. We have another half hour of the show to go. So if you did not get your question answered the first half hour, still time to do that. Call it in or text it in on The Real Estate Show. And welcome back to The Real Estate Show here on this Saturday morning. If you have that kind of a question related to real estate, call it in or text it in. I see one line is open, 651-989-9226. Or if it's easier, like a lot of folks are doing, send a text, 81807. Chris and Chris, let's go back to the phones. Tom is calling from North Oaks. Tom, you're on CCO. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you for your patience for waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I've heard of these different things about, you know, itemizing versus the standard deduction. But I don't know how it's affected theft and casualty losses. I've had a significant number of things taken away, i.e. stolen. And I don't know if that is something I can do this year in terms of standard deduction versus itemizing.
Okay, perfect. Mr. Mahold.
Yeah, I mean, so In the past, if you had theft loss or casualty loss, there were limitations that applied, but you could take that as part of your itemized deductions. With the new tax law, theft loss and casualty losses are no longer deductible. There are some exceptions if you're in a federally declared disaster area, but for the most part, those have gone away.
And how do you even keep track of all this stuff? I mean, it's crazy.
We
read all the
a lot.
Changes.
We've got good resources.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But I think there's a lot of circumstances, I mean, in taxes that it depends, right?
Correct.
There's
a lot of
it depends stuff. So,
all right. Larry is calling in from Inver Grove, I believe. Larry, we're listening. What is your question?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Happy almost New Year.
Yeah.
For recreation land, I'm thinking about retiring in probably a little bit less than a year, and I thought about buying a undeveloped lake lot. It has no buildings on it whatsoever, doesn't even have a driveway. But I have the means with access to equipment, et cetera. I thought about putting a driveway in, clearing an area for a cabin or a trailer, et cetera. And I was wondering, two questions, does it make sense for me to get if I don't want to pay, I could pay for this outright with 401 money, but I don't want to do that. I would rather get a loan. So two questions. Does it make sense for me to get this loan before I retire? I have top-notch, about as good a credit as you can get. And second fold, how much down is typically undeveloped rec land required for a loan? And then can I get a 10 or a 15-year? That's the questions I have.
Yeah. Well, first of all, your best opportunity to get the best loan is from a local bank that's around that undeveloped piece of land, because they'll understand it the most, because there's appraisal stuff that we have to deal with too. So they have to verify that that land is worth that money, and people that are close to it understand what those values are. So I think that's a real important part of it. Obviously, you can, even when you retire, you can still qualify based on assets and or what income you have coming from your retirement plan. But I would be talking to them now and check that out. But I would definitely go to a local bank or over there. And typically, mortgage companies don't do that if there's not a house that's on it. Hmm. So,
okay, very good. Thanks, Larry. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Here's a text, more of a comment, maybe a comment from you guys. Last year, it says, I got divorced and equity was split up, received around $50,000 currently in the second year of a two-year lease of a townhome. I'm 58 years old, trying to decide if at this age I should start over and buy. I don't like the sound of a 30-year mortgage taking me to 88.
Yeah, no one does. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, not many times people get to those that full 30 years just for a number of reasons, lifestyle changes, blah, blah, blah. I think, I mean, Chris Mahol just kind of shared with us that there's some tax advantages that just kind of maybe went away by having that. So in being 58 and renting, you're getting the same deduction as you would if you were owning a property, but you're not getting the equity. And I think the other important part is that you got to watch out for these places that you're leasing, because sometimes those owners decide to sell. And so you don't really have your, you can't say, hey, I'm going to be here for the next 15 years, because that owner might sell. And we've ran into that a lot, you know, where people are getting tossed out because the owner's finally saying, geez, I can finally sell, make some money on this. And you got to go find another place.
Text number, by the way, 81807. Here's another one, guys. So what needs to be done for a closing to happen? How long should a buyer have to get closing completed?
Okay. It really depends. If it's a cash deal and you don't have to go through the whole mortgage process, I mean, you could close basically probably within a week, as long as you get all the title work done. You want to have title work done because you want to make sure the property's free and clear and that you can sell it later without having any issues on it. So 7 days, typically it's probably 45 to 60 days that a closing is happening. Some are longer, depends. I mean, we've got a person that's buying a house that's the closing's a year, you know, because they're dealing with some inheritance stuff. And so once they get that money, they'll be able to do it. So it all depends. It's all negotiable.
It depends. Maybe we can stretch this one out. What about cabins for capital gains? What can you glean from that question, guys?
Yeah, so if I buy a cabin up north and I've owned the cabin for 30 years.
You know, it's not my primary home.
It's not my primary home, just strictly a second home, never been rented out or anything like that. The gain on that is going to be taxable. So I buy the cabin 30 years ago for $20,000 and it's worth $200,000 now. I'm going to have to pay tax on that $180,000 of gain.
And what about if that cabin was a second home? Can you 1031 that into something else?
No.
Okay.
Nope. So the 1031, the like-kind exchange, applies for business property. So if it's a rental home, you know, a straight rental property, I can do a like-kind exchange with that. But a cabin, since it's personal property, I've used it just for my personal use, the 1031 is not allowed.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. I see a line open if you want to use it for your real estate type of question, and that is 651-989-9226. Lynn's calling from Morgan with a question. Lynn, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding a rental I own and have owned for 8 years. And if I sell my house and I move into that one, do I have to pay any tax? And also, it's in a business name rather than my personal name.
Okay.
Will that matter any?
So basically, you have a principal residence that you've owned for whatever. You want to sell that. I mean, if he's lived in there more than 2 years, as a married person, you can make up to $500,000. no taxes, right, Chris?
Correct.
Okay. Now he wants go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just it's in a business name rather than my personal name, my rental is.
Okay.
And an LLC company, will that make any difference?
So he wants to move from his, once he sells his house, move into the rental, okay,
sure.
Which is under a business name.
Okay.
Are you thinking that you'd live in it for a couple years and then be able to sell it and not have a tax liability?
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. Here we go.
So with a lot of tax answers, it really depends. So moving into a home that's in a business's name, the LLC's name, there could be tax consequences with that, depending on what type of tax entity the LLC is. If it's a corporation, an S corporation, just a single member LLC, there could be tax consequences with that. So, you know, in the business's name, it really depends. It could be that you could move in there and there wouldn't be any issues with that. But there could be some unintended tax consequences with that. So, again, without knowing all of the facts of that, it really depends. And I really talked to a tax professional about
that.
But
it's possible.
It is possible.
Yeah,
it's depending on the facts.
So you could move into your own rental property after you've owned it for 8 years, depreciated during that time, move into your rental property after 8 years, live there for at least 2 years, and then you could sell it. And what?
It depends again. So it really depends because the rules are you look at, you know, the gain gets prorated based on how much it was used personal versus rented out. So just by moving in there, living in it for 2 years, let's say it was a rental property for 15 years, I move in it for 2 years and then sell it, I don't get the full exclusion in that scenario. The rules changed 5 or 10 years ago with that, where now you need to prorate that gain. You lose some of the exclusion with that. You'll be able to exclude part of it, but not the whole amount with that. So
okay. This sounds like me in our dialogues all the time when I'm trying to figure out different things in tax consequences. But, I mean, if he did own it, well, let's just say he did. He had it for 8 years.
Yep.
He moved in it for two. He got some good appreciation
sure.
in there. And say he made it's up $100,000 and he depreciated another $100,000.
Yep.
So he's got
$200,000 gain.
Yep. And then he lives in there for 2 years and it appreciates another $20,000.
Okay.
At that time.
Yep.
What's his situation?
So there's a gain of $220,000 with that. He's going to pay tax on the depreciation he's taken. Definitely. But again, that the gain gets prorated, you know, without doing the math. It's a function of how much personal versus how much rental and looking at those two. So
it's more advantageous, though, to move into that.
Yes,
house.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it would be more advantageous.
All right, we need to take a break, but we have more show to come. Thanks, Lynn, for the call. If you want to text in your question, 81807. And welcome back to our real estate show here on CCO Radio. Chris and Chris in the studio answering your questions. I know we've got texters to deal with, but you wanted to bring up something.
Well, I was going to say, remember I told you about that, all the showings that I got, like in one day? Another agent at our brokerage, Remax Preferred, Matt Prettyman, he said he had 5 showings in the last 7 days, 3 parties.
Wow.
With 1 scheduled tomorrow. It's been on the market for 18 months.
18 months.
They had a price reduction 2 months ago with no action whatsoever. And then all of a sudden, kind of a flurry of action.
Wonder why.
And talking to those, the other people, and why they're doing it. But year-end bonuses have been driving these showings, which is quite interesting.
That's an answer. Year-end bonuses. Wow.
So we're going to try to get through all these texts because there's quite a few of them.
Here's one that came in a bit ago. Here, I'll read it. I bought the Brooklyn Center house in 2014 for $150,000. I will have 5 years and then doing 1 year of Army service outstate. I want to rent that 1 year and expect to come back and live there. My house will be close to being paid off after that year. Will that renting affect my selling one day?
Go for it.
Yeah, so what will happen is, so if you've rented it out for 1 year and you've taken depreciation on it, so let's say we took $2,000 of depreciation, ultimately when you sell that house, you have to take that depreciation as income. Other than that, as long as you would have lived there for at least 2 out of the 5 years as your principal residence, you'd be able to exclude the gain except for the depreciation portion.
Yeah, so if he came back and he just lived in it, because what you're talking about is that what the rules are is that you have to have that as a principal residence 2 out of the previous 5 years, right?
Correct.
To be able to get that big deduction for a married couple.
Correct.
Okay. So what he's saying is that, hey, I've lived there. I've already had it for 5 years. I'm doing service, so I'm going to rent it for that year. Then I'm going to come back and just live in it. What if I sell it 15 years down the line?
Yeah. So then you'd have to track that depreciation you took for that 1 year going forward.
Perfect.
Other than that, pending any law changes, no problem.
Yep.
All right. The question is on a text. Are there still programs for first-time buyers in the suburbs of Minneapolis?
Absolutely.
Are there?
Absolutely. And there's a lot of assistance, like down payment assistance programs. So
here's another tax question. The texter says, I missed the past 3 years of filing 2015, 16, 17 taxes due to a personal auto accident. Can I just file them now? All 3 years I will receive a refund.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to get those filed as soon as you can with that. So, yep. Yeah, definitely get those filed.
What are penalties on that kind of thing?
It depends. Again, it depends. It depends. If you don't file your return and you owe on the return, the penalty is 5% per month for late filing penalties. There's late payment penalties and interest and those sorts of things. So definitely you want to stay in compliance with your returns.
If have a rental property that you turn into your residence and live there 5 years, how do you treat the depreciation taken in the past when you sell?
And you just covered that?
Yep. Just like we mentioned, that depreciation will come back and you'll have to pay tax on that.
There was a
question. Will that depreciation, you have to pay tax on it, or will that be counted as income as part of that $500,000?
Outside of the $500,000.
It's outside of it. Okay.
I know we've talked about this before. And how much, texter says, should you pay a realtor to do the paperwork if you find your own buyer?
That really depends between you and the realtor. Yeah, it's totally negotiable. It just depends how much you want to do. There is a thing called the facilitator agreement that because the problem is when we start putting our name to something, everything comes into play. So our insurance is intact and all that kind of stuff. But if we do a facilitator agreement, it's just based on the paper. I mean, it just becomes, talk to an attorney or a realtor to be able to do that for you.
Okay. Regarding inquiry on a cabin that becomes a permanent residence, what happens when you sell the property?
So I've got a cabin. Cabin decided to live in.
Yep, cabin, used it for 15 years, decided to sell this and go move up there permanently.
That becomes, yep. It says, regarding inquiry on a cabin that becomes a permanent residence, mm-hmm. What happens when you sell the property?
Yeah, I believe under the new rules you'd... you'd have to look at that, and you may not get the full gain exclusion on that. So definitely talk to your tax advisor. Mm-hmm.
Somebody wants to know, who's the youngest person you've sold a house to? Any 19-year-olds?
Yeah, actually, sold one to an 18-year-old.
Did you?
Yeah, I was the listing agent, and they were actually the buyer, and it was kind of a rental property. So that's the youngest I've sold it to.
All right. Now, I'm not sure you guys helped me with this one. About talking, you keep talking about 2.5 to 5 years as far as being able to talk to me again. What happens after 5 years? Okay. Do you know what they're saying?
I think they're saying talk to me again about what happens after 5 years. So yep. I think what we're discussing is that you have to live in it 2 of the previous 5 years, even if you've owned it 100 years.
Correct. Under the current tax laws.
Yes.
So you have to live in the house, yes, for 2 out of the past 5 years. Yeah, if you've lived there for, like you say, 100 years, and I move out for 6 years, the gain's going to be taxable at that point.
Yeah, and I think what's important to understand is that when you depreciate, you're getting tax benefits for that as you're going along. And so what the government is saying, or the IRS is saying, is that, hey, you got that benefit because you own that. Now, later on, you got to pay us back.
Right. It's timing.
Yep.
Well, we have a couple minutes to go. Any final thoughts? From you guys.
Wow. How about anything that someone could do on Monday to be able to help their tax situation?
Take care of the charities. Write checks to charities. If you're not getting the standard deduction, if you'll be able to itemize. And the rules for Minnesota are different, so you may be able to take the standard deduction on your federal return, take itemized deduction on your state return. So charitable contributions, help out those charities. If you have any losses on your stocks to offset gains. You could sell some stocks at losses now that, unfortunately, the market hasn't been doing great the last week. So so a couple last-minute tips there.
Okay. How about anything new that's coming next year that we should watch for?
Federal side, I don't know that there's anything from the federal side. I mean, there's always things coming. Minnesota will be interesting to see if they ever say they'll come into conformity with the federal rules with that. So I think Minnesota, there may be more changes than the federal side.
Because we're not in conforming with the
correct,
federal.
Correct, correct. So the IRS, the standard deduction is $24,000 for a married filing joint couple. For Minnesota, they didn't adopt the higher standard deduction amount.
How about for someone to buy a super cool, like, log cabin, VRBO-type place in Prescott, Wisconsin by Monday? Would that help them for their taxes?
Taxes, no, but
just say yes.
Great.
You got a real nice one over there if you want to know about it. But, yeah, you can always go to our website. We have Real Estate Radio Hour. Actually, that's on Facebook. So if you do that, chrisrooney.com, and then it's Prasky.com, P-R-A-S-K-Y.
Now, if somebody, you know, they're talking over amongst themselves thinking maybe this is the year that's coming that we want to sell, and let's make that move. What's the first thing or second thing they should do?
Call that realtor. Seriously, call a realtor that you trust in to be able to come out and kind of just tell you. A lot of people like to clean up their house.
Start decluttering.
I mean, that's always a good thing, but yeah. I'm telling you, the earlier you can get out the realtor, the better.
All right. Happy New Year, Chris. Good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
Chris Rooney, you too. Have a great New Year, and we'll be back again next week talking more real estate.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.